Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Welcome on back to Dana and Parks. Scott will be back on Friday. A little vacation. Got out of town for a few days. I don't even know where to begin breaking down this story, Sam. And I'm going to be honest, you're going to have to help me. Because when we first heard that two women from Kansas were missing, and then I believe, God bless them, their bodies were found somewhere by the Oklahoma border in Texas County, Oklahoma, somewhere. Things were not adding up. There's a lot about this story that is confusing. But at the heart of this story is a custody dispute involving two young children, okay? And I don't know, in all of the years on this program, we've ever talked about this. I covered as a reporter one murder that I can remember that happened during a custody swap where they were supposed to meet at, I believe it was a Walmart, and the dad never arrived. He was shot and killed by the mother of his children. Her parents shot and killed him. And that is the last time I remember covering a story of this nature. This must have been 15, 20 years ago in Kansas City that that happened. This one is full of just bizarre details. But again, at the heart of it is a custody battle involving supervised visitation.
Yeah, so they were going to get the children from the grandmother?
Correct.
I can't really tell based on the genealogy.
We're going to be careful the way we tell the story because I don't want to confuse people. There are so many people involved. But Veronica and Jillian were the two women, ages 27 and 39, Veronica and Jillian.
Veronica Butler being the mother.
Yep. That were in the car trying to go get her kids to take them to a party.
6 and 8 years
yep.
old.
Jillian is the supervised visitation supervisor.
Correct.
Who was filling in for another court supervisor, okay? So Veronica and Jillian, this is so sad, are both found dead. Their car was found abandoned on the way around the Oklahoma-Kansas border to pick up these children, okay? So investigators say one of the people arrested is the mother of this woman's romantic partner. So the grandmother of the kids is the easiest way to say it.
Right. Her name is Tiffany Adams. She is 54 years old.
And she is one of three very bizarre-looking people that have been arrested in connection with this double homicide.
Her 43-year-old boyfriend, somebody named Cora, and Cora's husband, Cole.
We don't even know I'm not even going to get into who those people are.
They are all four reportedly part of a group called God's Misfits, who are an anti-government group in the outskirts of Oklahoma there in the panhandle.
Okay. So when investigators find the car, the women are missing, and there is obvious evidence of a crime, of a struggle, a lot of blood, a hammer, one of the women's glasses. So they knew right away something bad had happened. They end up going to the home where these grandchildren were supposed to be, and they talk to this woman, the grandmother, and whoever else was in the house, and they end up doing some sort of computer search during the course of this investigation that showed someone on this computer before these women died looked up taser pain levels, gun shops, prepaid cell phones, and how to get a body out of the house.
They did buy a number of burner phones, 5 different stun guns at a nearby store.
So I guess my question is, for the purpose of our listening audience, when you are going to do a custody swap, in a lot of those cases, not all, but in a lot of those cases, there is a neutral third party safe space that sometimes the court will step in and say, this is where we're going to swap. Either a police department parking lot, a gas station parking lot, a Walmart parking lot. But during these types of custody disputes, Sam, they were, this says, embroiled in a custody dispute over those two kids.
Yeah, so the father is in a rehab center somewhere in Oklahoma. The grandmother of the children
does not get along with the woman who died.
Got custody and absolutely does not like Butler, the woman who is the mother of the two, was the mother of the two children. She has died. And according to a witness, a teenage witness told investigators that Cora's plan, Cora is not the grandmother, but the other woman involved, was to throw an anvil through Butler's windshield while they were driving to make it look like an accident.
Right.
Because per their research, they found that anvils regularly fall off of work vehicles.
Okay, let me just tell you right now that the four people who have been charged with this horrific crime do not look extremely intelligent. We'll leave it at that. The question becomes for me when we first, honest to God, I don't even know that this would be in the news the way it is if it weren't that this happened during the supposed court-ordered swap of these children. I don't know what you do to protect yourself as a court supervisor. This woman that died, the mother of the children died, but also a court supervisor.
Last name Kelly.
Who wasn't even supposed to be there.
She was the wife of a pastor from Hugoton, where Butler lived in
southwest Kansas. Yes, they just needed someone to be a supervisor. And let me ask you this. What does that even mean? Do you have to have training to be a supervisor? Do you take protection with you if you know you are supervising someone that is in the middle of a very heated, awful, nasty custody dispute? Like, I just don't even know where to begin to unpack this because it's so bizarre. There are so many people involved. But at the end of the day, this was a woman just doing her job, filling in for a court-ordered supervisor who ends up brutally taken from her family for no other reason than these four crazy people are alleged to have hatched this plot to take out the custodial mom.
By the way, it does not say when this fight over custody started.
It's at least 2 years old.
It does say court back documents in 2022, the Oklahoma Court of Civil Appeals directed a trial judge to give the children's parents shared custody. The ruling said that they are very young and immature parents who accused each other of inappropriate behavior and choices, but said the children are nurtured and comforted by the mother and are happy and excited to be with the father when they can
be. But wait
a
minute. In court documents, Sam, when you go through any custody battle or dispute, there's going to be testimony on both sides that the kids are better off with mom or the kids are better off with dad. Now the dad's in rehab, so the kids are better off with grandma. I'm trying to get to the heart of the safety issue here. Is it normal for a court supervisor to be in a car with the parent driving in the middle of nowhere on an Oklahoma-Kansas border to pick up kids? Like, is that this? Are we paying people to do that? 913-586-7798. I have so many questions about this.
It says here that Kelly was handpicked by Butler as a court-authorized
How can
supervisor.
You handpick your own supervisor?
I don't know.
913-586-7798. We'll get back with Dana and Parks on much more straight ahead. If you know anything about this system, text us and tell us how this works. Because it's odd to me that you would be able to choose your own supervisor.
Text line says no training needed.
Oh, boy. Okay. 586-7798. Back with much more straight ahead. So in court documents, one of the affidavits states that throughout this child custody case that dates back to, I think, 2019, recordings were obtained where the grandmother who's indicted in this case, her son, discussed death threats by two of those who are now arrested surrounding this custody case. And I'm asking you, you know, we have someone who was a supervised visitation person who has been murdered, tagging along with this mother as they tried to go see her children. How does this work?
By the way, I was wrong. It was the grandmother who handpicked the fill-in.
It is so convoluted. USA Today has picked up this story. I've read it three times. There are so many people involved. Four of them are charged in the case. It's why we're trying to just strip it down and ask you generally, how do these swaps work and what do the court supervisors do to protect themselves?
This also came just weeks before another hearing in the case where Butler was likely to be granted additional visitation rights.
The mom.
Yeah.
Let's go to Lacey in Independence. Hi, Lacey. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you, Dana?
Hi. Good. Help us sort this out. Like, how does this work when a court orders supervised visitation?
Okay. Well, I will say that as somebody that is a student for human services, I actually graduate in a couple weeks. It's in a social work field. So it's a very big, broad field. But what you are describing, that particular position would be fill in under the social work, human services kind of field. And unfortunately, we are an overworked, underpaid, and extremely underprotected field and work. We're very much needed. We're very much overworked and we're very much underprotected. We're one of the most dangerous jobs out there that people just aren't hearing about.
Because, but Lacey, obviously tensions are running high in what is considered in some of these cases to be extremely volatile custody fights over the children.
Absolutely. And as somebody that is trained in social work or human services that specialize with family and children, we are going through training constantly as far as like ethics and laws and trauma and all kinds of things to help us understand the community of people that we're working with and how best to communicate and work with them. But at the end of the day, everybody is different and you never know. And when you aren't providing community service workers, social workers, human service workers, fill in the blank, however you want, with the opportunity to protect themselves, this is unfortunately going to keep happening time and time and time again. When you have a field of people full of people that have deep compassion and want and desire to help people become better people, become better parents, become better whatever. Sometimes those people are taken advantage of and their safety isn't put first.
Lacey, and we've got so many people wanting to get in. I thank you for the work that you do, and I hope that you stay safe. These two women who died, Sam, knew what was about to happen, and let me tell you why. Authorities are saying that two of those who are arrested in this case blocked the road to stop the two women, the mom and the supervisor, and then diverted them to where the grandmother and another man were standing by. So it was four against two. And the victims asked, why does the court supervisor have to be involved in this? And was told, quote, she's not innocent either, as she is here supporting the mom.
Mm-hmm.
Good God. 913-586-7798. Let's go to Aaron in Blue Springs. It's such a sad story, Aaron. Hi, welcome on in.
So I work as a family lawyer, and I'm a guardian ad litem as well. So I guess I could shed some light if you had questions on this.
Yeah, I mean, what do you do for your own safety if you are there as a supervisor to help make sure the kids are safe? Who's making sure you're safe?
So most of the time, supervisors generally occur in a facility. I know that one of the questions that you had asked earlier was, you know, why would this be somebody that's handpicked by somebody, handpicked by the grandmother? That's not really uncommon. Most of the time, judges will ask for the party's input as to who they would like as a supervisor, if they can agree on somebody as a supervisor. There's a lot of people that do it.
Let me be clear, Aaron. It's not necessarily someone that the court can sign off on it, but it's not necessarily a court employee.
Absolutely not. Most of the time there's kind of two forms. I only practice in Missouri, but we either can go to juvenile court, and a lot of times those are people where the children have been taken by the state, or they come into the children's division's custody.
Sure.
And in that situation, the court in Jackson County or whatever county you're in is going to offer these services for free. And those will be social workers, or those will be supervised visitation people that are hired by the state. But in a situation like you have here, where there's actually probably a circuit court action and a custody action between, in this case, sounds like grandma and father and mother, most of the time the supervisors or therapists or anybody on the case are going to be private people that you refer to as a therapist or supervisors that you would pick.
Because court systems in small towns wouldn't have the staff to even begin to be, you know, hiring people out morning, noon, and night to help supervise the swap of the children.
Yeah, that would be very unusual for especially very small counties, very small towns, to have their own supervisors. Jackson County does have some. I'm sure Johnson County, Kansas has some, and some of the larger counties are going to have things. But again, those are generally reserved for cases in which there's a child abuse and neglect alleged. Yeah.
Yep. Where someone physically has to be in the room to make sure that the child is okay because there's an allegation of abuse.
Okay, the more I read, the crazier this story gets.
So, I told you I've read the USA Today story three times, and it's just like, wait, what? And then you've got the anti-government.
Adams, the grandmother.
Yeah.
Apparently refused her own son, who had full legal custody of these children, to see them often.
Correct.
Because she thought that he was not fit to watch over the children. So she, at no point, had any true involvement in this case until she inserted herself into it, and he went to rehab. So this lady's just been crazy since day one, allegedly. And she also said that Adams told Rickman, the son, that she was going to handle it because she knew the route that the judge took to work.
I mean, it's...
allegedly.
It makes you think if somebody said, will you be my court supervisor? Will you come with me to facilitate the safe swapping of the children? If you're not in law enforcement, it's very difficult for me to understand a scenario that I would agree to do that without someone coming with me for protection. 913-586-7798. We're back with much more straight ahead on Dana and Parks.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
All right, we are 100% not making this a topic, but I will say I am not surprised, and I am almost relieved to hear it is shutting down. This is from the Kansas City Star. Besieged by scandals and sex abuse allegations, IHOP Kansas City will close and reportedly form a new organization.
Bye.
Yeah. Wow. The International House of Prayer Kansas City, plagued for months by sexual abuse allegations, plans to close its doors and open a new, smaller organization. The leadership feels the best way to resolve the issues, their words, the issues, is to close IHOP KC as an organization and shift to a more missional church structure in the future. It would still include night and day prayer with worship in the context of a church. It would also mean fewer compensated staff members and a much bigger pool of volunteers. The email said that the 24/7 global prayer movement with headquarters in South Kansas City is suffering significant losses every month and cannot sustain the current infrastructure in place. I will remind you that they are suffering significant losses because of the sexual abuse allegations.
Do you remember the funeral home in Colorado that was accused of, well, they found 190 decaying bodies behind it?
Yeah, they were supposed to cremate them and did not.
Yeah, they gave the families back dry concrete, or no, that would be cement. I don't know. Anyway, they are now charged with something else. They are accused of misspending nearly $900,000 in pandemic relief money.
Oh, there it is. So here's
what's surgery.
This is awful,
jewelry.
But here's what's interesting about that. The charges for the irresponsibly disposing of human remains weren't
200 criminal counts.
If you looked at the sentencing on that stuff, it wasn't going to be what you thought it would be. You start stealing federal government PPP money, you're going away for a long time. They will get them on that fraud far more harshly than they will ever be charged for the disposal of the remains, unfortunately.
20 years, $250,000 in fines.
Yep, bye-bye. Bye-bye. Yeah. And then this has been in the stack, and we talked about OJ earlier today, but I still don't understand why anyone would want this car. So here's the story. Some 95 million people watched the slow speed chase in that white Ford Bronco in 1994, and it is now on the auction block for $1.5 million. The white Bronco, as you know, is part of one of the most notorious episodes in American history. It was June 17th that Simpson fled with his friend Al Cowlings in that SUV after he was ordered to surrender to police 5 days after the slaughter of his ex-wife and her friend at her Los Angeles condo. The 90-minute chase involving the NFL star, who was the prime suspect in the murders, was broadcast on live TV once again, with 95 million Americans stopping what they were doing to watch the spectacle. And remember, supporters of his flocked to the roadside and over bridges and overpasses to cheer him on. After 60 miles, the slow speed chase came to an end at Simpson's mansion, where he was finally arrested and charged with murders. And now 30 years later, the current owners are seeking to cash in.
Might as well. I forgot about the aspect about his supporters flocking overpasses,
with
but I guess
signs,
they had plenty of time to get there.
Oh my God, with signs, all of the stuff. It's three owners, Simpson's former agent and two friends of Cowling's, say they have seen sudden spikes in interest in the infamous vehicle of Simpson's death last week. Good God, they have no shame. Before OJ passed, Mr. Gilbert is quoted as saying, "We had always thought this would be the year we were going to sell the Bronco because it's the 30th anniversary. Who knows if we're all going to be around for the 35th or 40th?
Wow.
Yeah, they just have no, like, nothing.
I also thought that some random person had bought the Bronco in the time since the slow speed chase, but I now, as you just read, know that it is not. It is somebody directly involved with the case,
yep,
and they should not be allowed to sell it.
Here's why, Sam. Following that chase, Al Cowlings, who damn well knew OJ killed both of those victims, agreed to sell the Bronco for $75,000 to a celebrity memorabilia shop in Las Vegas until he found out that Bronco would be used to drive tourists around, purportedly to make stops at sites linked to the double murders. I mean, literally no one has any shame when it comes to that case. Gilbert, the agent, says that he's kept the SUV at his home until his wife told him, quote, she wanted her parking spot back. Then it bounced around for a while. Currently parked, by the way, in Tennessee next to other infamous vehicles, including Ted Bundy's 1968 Volkswagen Beetle. The Bronco in the chase is often mistaken for a separate Ford Bronco owned by Simpson. That Bronco was seized by police after blood was found inside. Why was blood found?
I wonder where the blood came
from. Why was blood
from?
Found inside? Because he killed both of them. And then this headline out of Missouri, and we'll move on to the deepfake story in high schools. A kidnapped woman near St. Louis was seen hanging out of a car speeding at 100 miles an hour this week. A kidnapped woman made multiple attempts to escape a moving vehicle, even hanging her body outside of the car's passenger door as that car sped around 100 miles an hour. My God, 36-year-old Helen White is accused of pulling the woman by her hair into the car and then taking off. Eventually, police used stop sticks and spikes to get the car to stop. She is charged with kidnapping and resisting arrest, is being held on a $250,000 bond. The two women knew each other. It happened in Washington Park, about a 10-mile drive east of St. Louis.
By the way, Scott Peterson was back in court today.
No, for what?
A hearing focused on the request from Peterson's lawyers. Their motion stated that the sole purpose for... Oh, they wanted to seal documents in connection to the case.
You know, the Innocence Project witnesses. Has picked that back up.
Yeah, the LA Innocence Project.
All right. Now on to the story that I want you to talk to your teenagers about tonight. And honestly, I have the girl kind and I have the boy kind. And I super think that we need to be talking to our boys about this more so than our girls. And here's why. And this is from the New York Times this week. Westfield Public Schools in Westfield, New Jersey, held a regular board meeting in late March at a local high school. But it was not business as usual for Dorothy Manny. In October, some 10th grade girls at Westfield High School, including Ms. Manny's 14-year-old daughter, went to administrators and told them that boys in their class were using artificial intelligence software to fabricate explicit images of the teen girls and circulate the faked photos. 5 months later, her family and other families say the district has done little to publicly address the doctored images or update school policies to hinder exploitative AI use. And here come the lawsuits, and I understand why. But I'm going to ask you, if you're in education, this technology is so new. Schools have not had time to get ahead of this. But if you haven't talked about this within your own school district, with your school resource officers, with your administrators, now is the time. The technology.
How are they going to get ahead of it?
I don't, Sam, there's got to be a policy written about this where it's automatic expulsion, period. There has to be consequences. And I don't know whether those consequences are criminal. It would depend on, would it not, the age of the girl, or because it's fake. Is it not criminal?
An automatic expulsion for what? The creation of it? The possession of it?
Certainly the dissemination of it.
If you were caught sending it to people? Yeah, I mean, what exactly are they going to crack down on these people for? And how do you prove that they were the ones that did it?
Student use of exploitative AI apps in schools is so new that some districts seem far less prepared to address it than others. And that makes safeguards precarious for students. Quoting here... from someone from Stanford, this phenomenon has come on so suddenly and is catching school districts unprepared and unsure what to do. In fact, in Seattle last fall, a police detective investigating complaints from parents about explicit AI-generated images of their 14 and 15-year-old daughters asked an assistant principal why had the school not reported this to police. The school official then asked, "What am I supposed to report?" While schools are required by law to report sexual abuse, is this sex abuse? I would say, as a parent of a daughter, you're damn right it is.
If you're the victim, it is whatever crime you
as
can
a defense
tag
attorney,
to it.
You're going to say it's not real. That's not really her 14-year-old daughter. It is a computer image that looks just like her. And I'm telling you, if you're in education, you've got to start talking about this stuff. And if you're a parent, you've got to start talking to boys and girls about this. Stay away from it.
Well, and for years, we heard about the students who actually took pictures of themselves in less than appropriate ways and sent them around, or sent them to someone who
then
sent them
around. Which could be in violation of child pornography laws.
Were they charged?
But is this considered illegal or child pornography if it is, in fact, theoretically fake? And I want to be clear, the damage that is done to these girls is exactly the same because it looks so real.
Oh, yeah, the emotional distress.
The emotional distress is exactly the same. I'm asking, where's the punishment? 913-586-7798. We got one line open if you want it. We will continue the conversation on the other side of this break. You are listening to Dana and Parks. So a handful of school districts are trying to wrap their arms around this in a handful of different ways. I don't think Westfield did a very good job. Beverly Hills Schools came out in February when they learned that eighth grade boys at Beverly Vista Middle School had created explicit images of classmates. The administration quickly sent a message with this subject line: appalling misuse of artificial intelligence. To all district parents, staff, and middle and high school students, urging community members to share information with the school to help ensure that students' disturbing and inappropriate use of AI stops immediately. But I want to be clear, from everything I see here, there have been no arrests. There is one civil lawsuit. It is a federal lawsuit from one of the Westfield High School girls, and she is seeking punitive damages in federal court for all of the reasons that you may imagine. I'm going to quote here from part of the lawsuit. Jane Doe is one of the many girls and women who have been and will continue to be exploited and victimized by non-consensual pornography generated through artificial intelligence. And it goes on to talk about how this is out there forever. The school replied, "We are confident the images have been deleted." Oh, okay.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Did they all tell you that they deleted them?
Would you believe that
you
if that was your daughter?
Yeah.
I wouldn't. Let's go to Aaron in Missouri. Hi, Aaron. Go ahead.
So I don't believe it's the school district's problem to or job, not problem, job to figure out whether or not that these were images that were created with AI. They should have just turned it over to the police and let the prosecutor figure it out, because in all intents and purposes, it's child pornography. And
they are mandatory reporters.
Yes. And if you call your buddy Eric Zahn and ask him, I'm going to bet he's going to say that the laws have not caught up with this.
Oh, I guarantee you that's what's going to say. I'll remind you, one of the administrators said to the parent who said, why didn't you call police and report this? The principal replied, report what?
Now, the state of Missouri effectively in 2017 passed a law against child pornography. They had previous laws against child pornography, but this specific, whatever you want to call it, amendment was added in 2017, and it states obscene material portraying what appears to be a minor less than 18 years of age.
So
that would include,
yes,
in my opinion, any AI-generated pornography with the face of a minor.
This is from Stateline.org. It says states are racing to restrict these deepfake images as it becomes easier to create. And we've seen this with celebrities. We're just now starting to see it with our kids. And it has to stop at home. The conversations have to begin there, where you are talking to your teenagers that this is starting to happen. Especially with your teenage boys, do not get involved.
By the way, a weird caveat in Missouri, it's a Class D felony if you have less than 20 images. If you have over 20 images, it becomes a Class B felony.
Let's go to Jason in North Kansas City. Hi, Jason.
Hey, Yeah, I don't understand what all the confusion is, because I tried to look it up while I was online, but the Supreme Court, I remember, I've always followed the news for a long time. So about two decades ago, the Supreme Court took up a case that involved basically fake images from a guy. And it was actually big news because it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled that no, you can't do that. It's still considered content, and you will be prosecuted.
And Jason, we're going to have to look that up because it is a hodgepodge of laws across the country. I understand what you're saying, and I do kind of remember that case. Indiana, Texas, and Virginia are trying to take up laws about sharing deep fakes. In Hawaii, they punish it up to 5 years in prison. Indiana, New York, and Virginia have enacted laws that add deep fakes to existing prohibitions. It's all over the board. Florida, South Dakota, and Washington are in the process of updating their definition to include deep fakes. You do not want that knock on your door. As the parent of a daughter, oh my God, you do not want that knock on your door. As the parent of a son, talk to your sons.
Absolutely disgusting.
913-586-7798. Scott will be back on Friday. A little brief vacation for him. And we want to thank you for your continued support of the Dana and Parks program.
Coming up in the bonus hour, we have a discussion with Marianne Matheny.
Back to OJ. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's an op-ed today that the Kansas City Star picked up about how our view of domestic violence changed after Nicole Brown's murder and all of the evidence that came out about the abusive marriage that she was in. And please stick around. It's an important interview. How things have changed in the 30 years when we talk about domestic violence and that case. We are back with much more tomorrow on Dana and Parks. Be safe tonight, everybody. Be good. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.